Welcome to Back Fence Unhinged, a conversational cross-country long-haul truck ride to leisurely enjoy along with the middle of your day, afternoon, or night. You're about to hear an unhinged story about stealing from a drug cartel from Terry Knight. Then comes the second unhinged part. We'll ask some questions about Terry's story and perhaps share a story or two of our own based on what we hear.
Mayhaps.
Who are we?
Well, I think you're Andrew.
And I believe you're Frayne.
Oh my God, we're doing good so far. I feel like, hey, Andrew, did you go straight through college? Are you a person who...
I did. And I think I'm one of those people that could have really used some downtime.
Yeah.
You know, I think
a gap year maybe.
Yeah. I was really looking for forward to college and really made the most of it socially. But I think like having that year of like, you know, maybe a little work, maybe, you know,
I might have leisurely time.
Might have valued it a little bit. I mean, I got a lot out of it, but how about yourself? Yeah.
Whenever somebody says gap year, I always think it's somebody who's worked at the gap for a year between high school and college.
That's a whole program.
It's a whole program.
You get one college credit.
You get one college credit and you learn how to greet. What is it? Greet, approach, the P is something else. Greet, approach, pontificate.
Right. Pontificate on sweaters.
No, I did not. I didn't finish college. I went.
Did you start it?
I did start it.
Yeah.
And I did very well in college. And my parents are dead, but I lived my whole life in opposition of them. So I was like, I'm doing very well in college. They're very proud of me. I better quit. And guess what? There's only one person who that screwed over. And you're looking at him.
Did you enjoy it while you were there?
I did. I actually really liked it a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not too late.
It's never too late.
Are you close? Do you need like just like a couple credits?
No. At this point, I'd have to
be a reboot.
I'd have to probably go for 3 more years. I'm sure they'd be like, we don't have this course anymore. I'm sorry,
right.
Ma'am.
This subject was eliminated by the government two years ago.
AI has eliminated all those subjects. I'm sorry.
Nice.
Go away, please.
Well, hey, who do we have with us today?
Ooh, we have a lovely guest today. Terry Knight appeared in the award-winning Hump Film Festival short Birthday Boss. She's appeared in Moss Story Slams and the Seven Deadly Sins storytelling show Pants on Fire, where she is a two-time winner. She is an Oregon native and has lived in Portland for 20 years.
Welcome Terry.
Hi.
Hi.
Where'd you grow up in Oregon?
Roseburg. Okay. Roseburg, Eugene area.
Yeah.
And for people who aren't from Oregon, tell us a little bit more about that region of Oregon.
It's kind of a rural area. It's smack in the middle of the state, where specifically I grew up. My grandparents had 500 acres.
Whoa!
And it's very remote. And my aunts lived there, and my mom lived down the road. So somebody described it like the Kennedy compound, and I'm like, yeah, okay. but it was great growing up there. And my family was like really, really tight, dysfunctional, but tight. And I decided that the best escape, because there weren't a lot of jobs there, and it was very timber dependent.
Yeah.
And by the early 90s, those jobs are kind of gone away. So I decided that going to college was probably the best thing for me to do, the best chance of getting out of there. And I love my family. I was raised by wolves. They were dysfunctional, and they were just dysfunctional and half criminal. Pot farmers, thieves.
Pot farmers before pot was illegal.
And when I was in college, I was getting financial aid, and they were growing pot in my grandma's house up in the attic.
Oh my!
And,
did your grandmother
didn't know?
Yes, she knew.
She knew.
So some of the dysfunction was kind of fun.
Well,
you put the fun in dysfunctional.
Somewhat, but at the time. If you got caught, they seized all your assets, and I would lose my money, my
College tuition.
Yeah, at the time, I would lose my financial aid. So it wasn't like, it was kind of stressful for me. Plus, I grew up watching these people like go to jail, all the money they spent on lawyers and missing work and
all of that.
And, you know, having to bail my mom out of jail.
Oh, geez.
And stuff like
that. At what age?
I was in college then.
But still.
Yeah. It's just, you know, and so this is like the early 90s. So I grew up like, you know, watching Family Ties and Alex P. Keaton. And he had cool, fun, hippie parents. I had the other guy.
This is the dark side of the hippie.
He had the Peace Corps. The movement. Yeah. He had the Peace Corps kind of parents.
And, right.
For people who are younger, Alex P. Keaton was played, that's one of Michael J. Fox's first roles, right?
His first role, I think.
Yeah. Well, no. He was in Silver Spoons.
Was he? Okay. But wasn't he?
No, that was Jason Bateman.
Sorry. Yeah. But he was sort of the young Republican, had it all figured out, and his parents were like, how did you become such a capitalist, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I grew up watching that, and that was like part of my, like, okay, I'm going to go to college. I'm getting a business degree because every company has a business office. You will always have a job, which kind of has proven true.
Well, that's smart.
Yeah. I did learn from them. But so I was living a commutable distance to U of O. And by the time I hit my senior year, I was like really, really bored with school, like really ready to be out. I wanted to be out and get my life
doing some business.
Yeah. And doing some business. Yeah. So
what did that I'm curious, like, just give us a snapshot of what you like expectations of what you thought that might look like.
I kind of don't think I remember. So at one time, I wanted to work for the FBI because that's how they brought Al Capone down, right? Was tax stuff.
Yeah.
I started taking tax classes, and I'm like, oh, hell no.
We're going to take them down a different way.
No.
Yeah. So about halfway through my senior year, I met this woman who was putting this business together. And her husband was a truck driver. He had two other friends from L.A. One was a truck driver, and they're going to put this trucking company together. And she was like trying to figure out how to do the business license. And I'm like, oh, I got this.
Like a trucking company startup kind of situation.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Wow. It was fun. Like I was like, oh, this is going to be so good for my resume. And I'm going to, you know, help her get this going. And then they hired me and we did all the business license, the tax ID, setting up payroll, all the filings and everything. So after a couple of months, we had 10 trucks. We had 12 drivers that we had hired. We had an office and I keep wanting to call it a machine shop, but it was a mechanic shop.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah. So you're like far away already. You're like moving away from your parent past of the hippie, like that world, right?
Yes. I'm like, you know, doing corporate stuff. And this is, and it was exciting. And there was also the sense of it would be easier if I had like people who knew what they were doing, but all the research and all the, it's just very exciting. It was a couple of months into spring term. I was working 2 days a week. And the part of the other thing about this was so great was that, because we had other people in the office, but you got to choose what your job was. Like things would come up and you can say, oh, I can do that. Or, you know, I'll let her handle that. So I did payroll for the drivers. I did cash advances, fuel cards, all the money stuff.
That's serious business for a college senior.
I'm 21.
And I feel like healing from having to bail your mom out in a way.
Yeah. So, but I was at school on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And when you're dealing with drivers and they're stuck on the road in like Colorado and they need something and you're not there, it's not really working that. It started to cause problems. And I was not about to give up any of the things that I was doing because I love this job. So I talked to the owner. His name was Ronald. We made a deal that I would drop my classes, and it was late enough in the term. I lost, you know, that money's gone. But I would drop my classes and then be there for them with the idea that we would be settled down by fall. And also, I would be making money this whole time and saving up for when I moved away. And so it was a good deal.
Where was your fantasy move away to?
Anywhere.
Oh, okay. Sure.
Just away.
Just away from the middle of Oregon.
Yeah, well, and not like, you know, L.A. or any big, big place, but just, you know.
Spokane dreams.
Exactly. So But I quickly discovered that being there full time gave you a different picture than being there part time.
Oh.
And one of the things I liked is that Ronald trusted me with the cash. Like, that was important to me. And he would give me like $8,000 and I would put it in my purse and go across the street to the bank and make a deposit. And I felt special because, you know, this was something he trusted me with.
And that's different in your family too, right? Because you kind of grew around people that weren't necessarily like trust wasn't maybe one of the main things. So you being having money like that and being able to handle it seems like it was extra cool.
I lost our lunch money in second grade. And so my family was like, we're never giving you money ever again.
Oh my gosh. Family.
My sisters were like, you remember that time?
Anyway. Yes, I do.
Yeah. You never let me forget. So yeah, this was important to me. Well, and so working there full time, I realized I was not the only one. He was giving somebody else $8,000 or $9,000 to go to the bank on the other side of town. And the purpose of this, because if you deposit, this is like RICO laws were kind of new. And if you deposited $10,000, you had to in cash, you had to fill out a bunch of paperwork.
Oh.
So he was screwed.
We're going back to Al Capone times now.
Wait, there's more. And then I noticed there were two people that never got along. And the reason is he was setting them up to fight. He would frequently set people up to fight to just create discord. And I think it was so that we wouldn't talk to each other about things.
Oh.
Wow. This is high-level manipulation going on right here. Oh,
he would tell her, like, oh, she has this paperwork in her desk that I need. I need you to go get it. And then I heard him telling the other person, put this in your desk and don't let anybody have it.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
It's psychotic.
That's diabolical.
It was. And I would sit there and I would, like, oh my God. And his temper was very volatile.
Scary.
Yeah. And I think it was just kind of, I think that was just a progression. There was the real turning point, like there was just chaos, but it wasn't the positive business chaos anymore. It was starting to get to be kind of weird.
Did you have any regrets about like not going, like staying here and not going to college? Or were you still like, I'm glad I left that?
I was still like, I've seen worse. I can handle this.
Great.
So then this gun showed up in the office.
What?
Like, the dispatcher and I were like, why do we need a gun? And like, no, this is not
like
okay.
A handgun.
Yeah.
Like a scary handgun.
It was a handgun.
Are
it was,
all handguns scary?
Yes.
I mean, it was a fancy one, but it was still like not something we need in the office. Right. Right? And this is like, again, early 90s, going postal was a thing at the time. So we talked to him, and he agreed to lock it up in my desk. Would that make you feel better? I'm like, well, at least I know where it's at.
Sure.
And then, still, it's like now it's knowing his manipulations, that must have been a little like, I
well,
guess.
It was better than it being out, not knowing where it was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I came into work one Monday morning, and my office door was broken, and my desk was broken into, like the whole drawer was broken, and of course the gun was gone. And of course we knew he did it. But that just made it even more like, you know, why didn't you just call me and, you know,
right. Like, I have get my keys.
Yeah, right. So, and not knowing where it was and finding out he was down at the machine shop and they were laughing and joking and they were shooting at somebody's feet, like, you know, all in good fun. So that was a little unsettling.
Yeah,
very.
And then.
And just the fact that he had to break into your office, like you said, to get it instead of asking you, like.
Or
that just seems like some kind of drug head rage or something like that. Like was, moment or
yeah.
I don't know.
Well, and he had a key to the door. Like there was no, I don't know. It was weird. But then a little bit after that, his father became very ill, and he needed to go see his father, who did pass away while he was there. He went to Puerto Rico, and he was there for about a month. When the phone bills came in. And I was looking at the phone bills. There was not one single call to Puerto Rico. They were all to Colombia.
Oh.
Which we had one driver who was from Colombia. His name was Alfonso. And he was, you know, he was a lovely human being. I didn't understand, like, why would that's one of those things that if you lie about that, there's really something going on there. And that was just like between those two main events and him just being so volatile, I'm like, okay, I'm done with this. I'm done with this. This is, you know.
Scary.
Yeah. And it's cool to get away from this shit.
Yeah.
So I left the company and I was concerned enough that I went to California to visit my dad for 3 weeks. To get away from, I didn't know what he was going to do because he was very mad. And of course,
Ronald was mad.
Yeah. He was not happy. And which meant I lost my tuition reimbursement. I lost my opportunity to make money over the term. And so I was a little I don't know what I'm going to do. And also, we had a driver, Alonzo. His family moved up from LA, and Alonzo was on the road a lot. So I spent a lot of time with his family because they didn't know anybody, and I'm helping get oriented. And I became really, really, really good friends with his wife. And she was, I loved her so much. I spent like half my time at their house because we were just having fun. They had people, she had some Cuban friends that would come up and they play music all night. And just, she taught me how to cook and literature. And it was just a really good time. And Ronald started getting jealous of that. And he told me he didn't want me hanging out with them. It's like, you can't really, that's not cool.
Yeah.
Tell me what to do. So it was about August, and I started looking through some stuff, and I found this notebook, and Ronald had me call. One of the things that I did was I called the airline sometimes and maybe got tickets for him or his wife or some of the drivers sometimes if something happened. And there was this one ticket. I had these codes, and one code was this guy that I don't even know who he was. He's in Texas. We didn't have anybody. No.
Fishy.
Yeah. Well, it was just like some guy, you know, we bought this on-call ticket because you can do that in the days before 9/11, and they give you a code, and, you know, he would just use that code to get it. And I hadn't heard anything about him since, so I'm like, this guy's not coming here. So I called the airline and I told them that I had bought this ticket for my boyfriend and he was an evil bastard and I never wanted to see him again. And I wanted my money back. And the credit card that we had used to buy that ticket had been lost by a driver. So she couldn't put it back on the credit card. So she sent me a check.
Nice.
Yeah. Minus the $100 transaction fee. I'm like, yeah, I got a check for $1,100.
Nice.
Tuition, books, yay.
Sweet. Yeah.
I'm good to go.
So it was the 90s.
It was the 90s, right? 90s.
Now that's your coffee card now in college.
Yeah, and school had just raised tuition from 500 a term to 800.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
So I finished school and I graduated and I moved away and life goes on. And it was about 8 or 9 months later, after I'd moved, I saw the headline on the newspaper. There's a picture of Gilberto Rodriguez and Miguel Rodriguez out of Miami and New York, in handcuffs, around by DEA agents. They were the head of Cali drug cartel. And they were Alonzo's brothers. And I had gone to LA with them one time, and I met
The truck driver from Colombia.
Yes, the truck driver. I was hanging out with all the time and spending all my time with.
Who Ronald was jealous of.
And Ronald
this is the end of a murder mystery right now, and it's all coming together.
Yeah. So, yes, they were the head of the Cali drug cartel, and I had gone to L.A. with them. And, you know, it's like I met him, but it was like, you know, that's our uncle, and met him and said hello and stuff. But that was, And so I am just totally like, wait a minute. Oh, I stole $1,000 from the Cali drug cartel.
Oh my God.
Oh my gosh.
Yes. And I was like, I just, you know, what do you do with that? And so I was kind of like, well, I wanted to be Alex P. Keaton, and I ended up being like my mom always said I was high tone. So I guess if you're going to be in the drug lifestyle, go with the big guys. Don't waste your time on these.
Damn. Lines.
But yeah. So, yeah.
Wow. But you know, you have, it's interesting because you have you know, the 90s were still antiquated enough that, you received a check. There's not really a digital trail of things like there would be now.
Yeah.
And nope. So, nobody would ever know that you pulled this thing off or a truck driver had lost a credit card. But because you had the wherewithal and knew that, You could put all these pieces together and get your own tiny slice of the drug cartel pie.
And did some of these things start to like, oh, no wonder we were able to get like 12 trucks in like 2 months. And, you know, there's some of these like...
There was the briefcase full of cash like you see in the movies.
Yeah.
Like, right. I only saw that one time and it did kind of go, like there were little things.
Yeah, 9,000 here, 9,000 there, yeah, 9,000 everywhere.
Little things that, you know, this something's not right here.
Wow.
But I like it's podunk little affordable town to live in. And it things like that. You're not going to meet anybody like that here.
Wow.
In the sticks.
Why do you think this was in Eugene?
It was outside of Eugene.
Outside. Yeah. Do you think they chose there just thinking like, hey, we'll be off the radar?
Yeah, I do think that because I know that Alonzo, when he was in the office, he'd be yelling at his family on the phone. He'd be yelling at his son. And like, I understood the words, Escuela de Militario.
Oh. A little boarding school threat, right?
Military school.
Military school.
Yeah,
right.
Military school. So he was, I do think that he moved his family up here to get them away from LA.
Do
wonder if he, you know, saw things coming and was just kind of distancing himself, or I don't really know.
That is a wild big job story.
First big job. Especially if you're aiming to be Alex P.
Let's see how the drug cartel does it.
Yeah.
They've got a few business practices figured out.
I came from grandma's pot in the attic. Let me see how the big guys go.
Exactly.
That is wild. Yeah. What a story.
And so like breaking into your office is a little like, it's a little boring here outside, Eugene. It needs to be more like LA where we need to like break into things and all that kind of stuff. Do you know what ever happened to Ronald or anything like that? Or if his name is Ronald, by the way.
Well, right. I'm sure his name was not Ronald.
Nobody's name is Ronald.
He was at McDonald's being like, I've got an idea for my identity.
Don't have to make up names to protect anybody's idea.
Right.
That was not his name. This is kind of weird. So Alonzo told me one time, I was talking to him because I was still a little bit concerned and he was in LA, Ronald's gone to LA. He goes, you don't have to worry about him. He's dead. And the way he said it was so casual, I just thought like, he's just telling this so I would feel better and not like, you know, worry about this. And he's gone. And I didn't, but I don't.
In retrospect.
Yeah, I don't really know.
Wow.
And, wow.
Yeah. And then I do know that the family moved back to Columbia. Not right away, but I think it was about 10 years ago.
Wow.
So. Wow. That's really, yeah.
My first job was working at a fruit stand.
my first job after college is I just went to Manpower, the temp agency. I was like, I'll do anything for minimum wage. What do you got?
Yeah. My first job in college was working for Crabtree and Evelyn. Soaps and smellies, jams and jellies.
Oh, so. A lot of mail order, right?
I didn't do any of that.
Okay.
That's the corporate.
This was
This was a franchise.
This is the brick and mortar.
Yeah,
as they used to say.
Created the habit in me of always having to straighten things on shelves for forever.
Yeah.
Anyway, so just really a different British cartel. You know?
Wow, that's so nuts.
Well, and then I went from because that's not ever going on a resume. And I haven't really talked about it until like the last couple of years.
I bet. You
want
a little time.
Thanks for sharing it with us.
Yeah, thank you.
I don't want to tell employers, yes, I embezzled from my first employer. but I worked for Evergreen, which I don't know if you lived here, Evergreen Helicopters in McMinnville.
That's a whole other story.
Wait, give us the thumbnail sketch on that one.
They helped lift the Shah out of Iran in the late 70s, and they did a lot of contract work. Yeah, and the owner was, again, very volatile. It was privately held company. He was very volatile. I worked for his finance guy later on who said, oh my God, that guy was so shady.
And he bought the Spruce Goose, right?
He brought the Spruce Goose, yeah.
Oh my God.
That's why the Spruce Goose is in Oregon.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
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 Oh my God, this guy is totally shady. This podcast has gone in many different ways. No, do not apologize.
Well,
what are you talking about? It's
amazing.
I did not know that Howard Hughes' Spruce Goose was here because of Evergreen Helicopters. I'm learning a lot of Oregon history here that I had no idea about.
Yeah. Well, hey, It's actually, it's time for Bree's Hot Minute, brought to you by Powell's Bookstore manager, Bree Hoag. Bree's been listening intently as she's been driving her big rig across Kansas, I believe. She's,
yes.
She's now, and she's got some tasty book recommendations based on the themes from Terry's story.
I was struck by Terry's dueling stories of trying to make it out, first with her hippie upbringing and later with the trucking business. It made me think of Emily St. John Mandel's book, The Singer's Gun. The main character, Anton's family, is always scamming someone or running some con, and he's just trying to move on and live a more normal life with a normal job. But then his cousin shows up and tries to pull him back in for one more con. It's a good and fast-paced read. The next book I have to recommend is Yellowface by R.F. Kuang. In this book, June, a white woman, steals her recently deceased friend's unpublished novel and tries to rebrand herself as an Asian writer as she embarks on a literary career. Everyone in this book is unlikable, and it's so good. It was very popular at our bookstore, and it's as much a commentary on writing and publishing as it is about the theft of culture, ideas, and art. And also friendship and bullying. It has everything. Back to Fran and Andrew.
Thank you, Bree.
Oh my gosh.
That's so good. Always so good. Hey, Terry, where can folks learn more about you?
You can see me at Pants on Fire. I'm there quite frequently. I love that show.
Okay, so if you're in Oregon, that's an Oregon-based show here in Portland.
It's here in Portland, okay. Yeah, at the White Eagle Saloon.
Okay, great.
Beautiful.
And then do you have an Instagram handle that people can look for?
I do not. I have a very low social media profile.
I wonder why.
Yeah, right. Totally.
Ronald might still be out there somewhere. And before we get to our final question that we ask guests, we'd just like to thank you, the listener, for hanging out with us and listening along. We're growing, and we just want you to like us, please. Really like
us.
Maybe
recommend the podcast to a friend.
Yeah, maybe send, after you hear this podcast, if you have friends who are particularly fond of cartel stories.
Or embezzling.
Send this along.
And then last question for you, Terry. Is there something that might not bother other people, but that's just makes you go unhinged?
I'm self-absorbed. I'm self-absorbed, and I really don't like malicious gossip because I don't care that much about what other people are doing. Like, if it's good stuff, I want to celebrate. You know, I will do that all day long. But that's my thing.
Gossip.
Just
malicious gossip.
Malicious gossip.
You don't want the tea.
Yeah.
No tea for Terry. There's no tea in Terry.
Well, thank you so much, Terry, for coming on. That was a wild story.
It was wild. And thank you, Andrea, for being a great Andrea. I just called you Andrea.
That's my aunt, not me. She's not here.
You're named after your aunt. Thank you, Andrew, for being a great co-host.
Oh, thank you, Frayne, being the same.
Thank you. And thank you to our fabulous behind-the-scenes editor and producer, Julia Oppenheimer. Myself is executive producer. Myself and Andrew Dixon are co-hosts and co-creators. Thank you to musician and frontman for Lostlander, Matt Sheehy, for creating our theme music. And thank you to Powell's Books and Kiln Co-working Space for making this episode and our live shows possible. We recorded this show at X-Ray FM. Find them online or at 91.1 or 107.1. You can find out more info about Andrew, me, Backfence Storytelling shows and workshops at backfencestorytelling.com. And once again, thank you for listening.
Bye.
Bye.